I'm going to relieve the pressure off this stage in just a moment. I'm going to just kind of tell you all how we're going to do tonight. We've done a few of these town halls, and we've learned how to keep you guys from getting sore rumps, so we're going to work on that today. So first of all, we've got about four subjects that we're going to cover, and we're going to do two of those in about a 30-minute stint here right off the bat. And to do that, I'm going to have the following speakers. I'll have Scott Smith, Alan Slagle, and Tony Locke. And they're going to speak about things like how we're going to be promoting work and how your hard work shouldn't, the rewards of your hard work shouldn't go for somebody else's reward. And so Scott will be talking about that and also saving our homes. So Tony Locke and Alan Slagle are going to be talking about how we're working to save your homes. And then we're going to take about 15 minutes for Q&A on those subjects, and if you can keep it close to those subjects anyway. And then we'll take a 15-minute break. And you can just mingle and talk one-on-one with everybody. That would be a great time to get your picture. And I'll tell you, there's a price for pictures over there. We're looking for donations. We're, according to the paper, we're about $60,000 behind our opponents for the next election. So we'd appreciate any help you could give us. There's a little box over there for donations. But the pictures, we know whose pictures you really want, so it's priced accordingly. A picture with Tommy Strock or Jeanette Ward is $20. A picture with our speaker or our majority floor leader is $10. And any of the rest of us is $5. So then we'll wrap up that break, at that 15-minute break. We'll get back up here and we'll have some more speakers come up and talk about a couple more subjects that are near and dear to all of our hearts, protecting our kids. We'll have Chris Knapp, Mark Jennings, and Jeanette Ward come up and speak about that. And then also we'll be talking about restoring our freedom. And for that, we'll have Bill Allman and Ken Pendergraft come up and speak. We'll do another Q&A at the end of that. And then the real important stuff, we'll have Mark Jones come up and talk about some very important things that he has on his heart. And then we'll close with our keynote speaker, which will be the majority floor leader, Chip Nyman. So that'll be the thing. You really want to wait around to the very end, and we'll open up for Q&A for everything at the end of that. So that should be the plan for tonight. And we'll start right away. We're letting everybody get off the stage except for Scott Smith, Alan Slagle, and Tony Long. You want a discount, you got to talk to me. Now, I'm not talking much today, and let me tell you, if you know me at all, that is out of the norm. And the reason is I am fighting a terrible cold, and so we're going to let these folks do the talking. But I'll be available for one-on-one conversations during any of the time that we're available for that. You know, we've really been working hard during this interim compared to what we usually do. This is a citizen legislature, and what we're supposed to be doing is going back to our businesses and taking care of our families and our businesses at this time of year. But we as an organization partnered up with the Freedom Caucus in Washington, D.C., with the hope that they would give us some assistance in fighting the insiders. And what they've done is they've hired an executive director for us, and her name is Jessie Rubino. She's an attorney, so she helps us quite a lot with legislation, but also just with communicating. And so we are really pushing hard back in their realm, as David Iverson said, which is the left-leaning media, and we're kind of starting to edge our way into that, as well as our own media, like David Iverson and Tom Kelly's shows. But and they're not very happy about that, by the way. So we're doing that year-round. It's becoming, you know, quite an encompassing thing. And so that's the plan now, is not to allow them to take over the moment we leave Cheyenne and just run things the way they'd like to run things. So we're pushing back on it. You've seen we pushed back on the governor and his agenda to make us carbon negative, and we're trying to expose those things. So what these guys are going to talk about here now are some very important things. I think one of the most important things right now in most people's minds is how am I going to keep my home when these property taxes are increasing by double-digit percentages every year? My home, my taxes went up 30% this year. And I know that you know, if you're on a fixed income, how can you prepare for that? And in the Revenue Committee, we've been fighting that. Tommy Strock and Tony Locke and I are all in that committee. We've been fighting to try to find a good solution for you all to do that. And Tony brought many opportunities last year for us to have a cap on how much your property tax rise. I'll let him talk about that, but just suffice it to say, they were against it, now they're for it. So we are winning, folks, we're winning, and that's the important thing. So we're gonna talk about that, and then I want Alan to talk about a bill that he brought that passed both the House and the Senate and the governor vetoed that would have protected your personal property rights. And before we get to that, I'm gonna have Scott Smith start out by talking about our efforts to keep Medicaid expansion from becoming law in the state of Wyoming, which would create the biggest growth of government we've ever seen. So with that, I'll let Scott come on up and get us started. And if you happen to see me kicking anybody, that's because they're going a little bit too long, okay? So just don't worry about it, they'll survive.
Hence the crutches. I'm Scott Smith, Representative House District 5, Southern Goshen County. Biggest town in my district will be Torrington, if you want to put a place on the map. So I have been blown away at just government in general and how much it has expanded. And this property tax, I think, is just one way to hold the government accountable for their spending. And so, for instance, just in the state of Wyoming, per 10,000 capita, we have over 800 government employees per 10,000. The national average is 400. And so we would have to, per 10,000, so we would have to get rid of almost half of the government employees just to be on par with the rest of the nation. So that's something to keep in mind. One of the liberals in my district likes to tell us, oh, we receive filet mignon services for ground beef prices. And if you think about it, I feel like the government is just constantly spending, 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 and it's getting out of control. And you can look at, from the state level, having $25 billion in surplus in just investment accounts, to county, to local municipalities, to even school districts. And I know my own school district saves about 20% a year, and they have to quick hurry up and spend just so they make the statutory minimum requirement to not have to give it back to the state. And so I feel like we're just not being good stewards. I know in the school district arena, for instance, the state is addicted to the federal dollars, and that's another area we need to get off, because those federal dollars, just in the school arena, you have, say that one more time? Oh.
Strings attached.
Lots of strings attached, yes. And so, for instance, I think in our state it's only 11% of education is funded by the federal government, but it takes almost 8% to administer those requirements and those strings. So I think our state could financially easily get away from the federal dollars. Medicare. So those are just some of the things that we are fighting with overspending. My county specifically, I had a good conversation with one of our commissioners, and it is all about the Department of Health and how much they spend on vaccines. And so this initiative that they want you to sign over there, my county only will lose maybe 15% of the county portion, but 76 cents on the dollar goes directly to education between K-12 and our community college. And so I think there's a huge disparity there. But people like their free stuff, but to what expense? And it's socialism. And so we need to just fight back hard against that at every step of the way. So it comes at us from every direction, from the state to the school districts to the county. And so my recommendation, get involved, be involved, and help fight the cause so we don't have things like Medicaid expansion that would bankrupt our state. So.
He's right. Medicaid expansion would bankrupt us. It's really the thing about Medicaid expansion is it's allowing for health insurance for people who could work, and it inspires them to not work as much as they could, and that's just not a Wyoming value. And our fellow legislators seem to believe that the federal dollars coming into the state, that's a windfall, and that's the wrong kind of thinking in our minds. So. With that, we'll move on to property taxes and what we're trying to do to give some relief to these double-digit increases. So, Tony, if you'd come on up and share with everybody the efforts we've been working on.
How y'all doing? Tony Locke. I'm from Natrona County, House District 35. And John's right. One of my big battles has been property taxes and basically trying to put caps in place. And there were some bills and some resolutions and things we tried to run last time that we're actually going to run again. But one of the things you're going to see in this next session, you're going to see a lot of bills. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's trying to talking about proper, you know, tax caps and all those kinds of things. And I want you to keep in mind that the content of these bills is what matters. Because what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of bills that are going to push these great concepts. They're going to sound wonderful. But let me just give you a little feel for how this works, because let's just take property tax as a perfect example. Okay, I know a lot of people experience things. I had people in my county 100% in 1 year. I had other people that same 100% over the 2 years. That's obviously too much. But you're going to see these property tax bills are going to come out and say, well, we're going to limit it at 5% tax. You even saw a bill sample that came out and said, we're going to make it to where it's automatic 5% tax a year. I want you to think about that just for a second. In 14 years at 5%, your property tax doubles. Okay? So by the time you get done paying off your mortgage in 30 years, your property tax has gone up four times. So now you've replaced your mortgage with your property tax. And let me ask you, does that feel like you own your home? The answer is a definite no for most people who are thinking about this. These are the kinds of things we have to get real, legitimate reform in here. And when we talk about a property tax cap, it can't be, oh, it's automatic this or it's an automatic that. We have to get real performance here. So our goal, some of the bills we're pushing, I could talk to John, throw the hook out there, and he'll snag me out of here. That's why he keeps the hook handy. It's because of me. But anyway, that being said, I want you. We need your help. And we need your help in not just pushing property tax bills. We need property tax, real true property tax reform, where we put in legitimate caps that keep it very low so you actually do feel like you own your home. One could argue that if you pay a property tax, you don't. That being said, we're going to be looking for help and support on these bills, because you're going to hear, again, you're going to hear a lot of, hey, this great property tax bill. But what you're going to see when you get into the content of some of these bills being pushed by the other side, it's not real reform. And over time, you're still going to be hurt by this. And we've got to get this back to where people are not being harmed by these escalating prices. That being said, one other thing I want to throw out here, one other battle that I'm pushing and fighting, and doesn't affect a lot of you here up in this part of the state, but another thing is Rocky Mountain Power pushing their increase in electric costs. It's coming to Rocky Mountain Power first, but believe me, they get it in one place, they're going to push it in another. And for those of you who are in counties that are affected by that, that's another area where we should battle. We won a little bit, but we didn't win enough. And so these escalating costs, every one of them are hurting us. And so anyway, we are definitely looking for support, but what we're going to be pushing is real reform. We're going to be pushing property tax caps that try to cap it below, you know, as low as we possibly can. And ultimately, when our property tax prices go down, We want to be able to ultimately take property taxes down too. How many of you ever seen that happen? Almost never. But those are the kinds of things that we're going to be pushing. I'm pushing a property tax tax holiday bill. It won't make it out of the speaker's drawer, but I push it anyway. But anyway, we're just looking for, again, your involvement, your help to help us get real reform in this property tax arena and try to put some protections on you owning your home long term. So I'll see you next time.
Said I wouldn't talk, but I can't help myself. So here's the thing, folks. I said that we're winning, and we are. They've come out with an agenda that says they want a 5% cap. Tony just said that's going to double your property taxes in 14 years. So really, there's a difference between what we've been trying to do for years and what suddenly they're trying to do. And it really takes looking at the bills and determining what does the bill really do, because they put a nice title on it, just like they do in Washington, D.C., and then it does something very different. And I'm going to give you, for instance, this property tax bill, they're trying to make it so that it automatically goes up 5% every year. Well, sometimes the economy doesn't increase the property value, so we're trying to make the property value adjust to that. And we've been fighting it day and night, tooth and nail, the whole deal, trying to keep them from getting a victory, but it really does come down to what Tony just said. He's going to run a real tax reform bill, and it's probably not even going to get introduced by the speaker. And that's what's important. So we're going to try to pull those out of the speaker's drawer and force a vote on those so that you can see which legislators are really for protecting your property rights and which ones are not, which ones are for protecting the government. So it's up to the Freedom Caucus to make sure that you get that information. It's up to the David Iversons and the Tom Kellys of the world to get that word out to you. But please pay attention, and please tell your fellow citizens and anybody that you know that might vote so they understand what's really happening in the legislature. So something else happened in this last session that I really want Alan Slagle to share with you. This really has to do with you owning your own property and being able to do what you want to do with that. So Alan, come on up.
Thank you, John. I am Alan Slagle, representative for House District 2, which is the middle east side of the state. I have all of Niobrara County, the northern or the southern half of Weston County, and the northern half of Goshen County. The part of Goshen County that Scott Smith doesn't have, I have, which is the rural part. But anyway, what I want to talk to you about is eminent domain. Last year I ran a bill, and what it was is to restrict the use of eminent domain for distribution lines from wind farms to where they want to take the power, saying that you couldn't use eminent domain to get those power lines in. You had to negotiate with landowners just like you did to put the windmill towers on people that got the wind towers. Well, we got it through the House, we got it through the Senate, and then the governor waited and waited, and at the last minute he vetoed it. And so we tried to do a veto override vote. On Friday, I had went around and lobbied people. I thought I had the votes to get it. Well, we went home for the weekend, came back on Monday, we had the vote, and several of the people that told me yes on Friday voted the other way on Monday, and so we didn't override the veto. So because of that, the Ag Committee actually took that up for an interim topic. And so we've actually got two eminent domains coming out of the Ag Committee this year, which is a plus having them come out of committee, because when they come out of committee, they have a little more priority than they do if they're an individual bill like we try to run. And so we've got one that was pretty similar to the one we ran last year, which basically just said you couldn't use eminent domain, period. And then we've got another one that's a compromise. And what it says is if you've got a whole bunch of people on this power line, that property would be under that power line, if 85% of them say yes, then the company can use eminent domain on the last 15% to get their way through. Obviously, you tell them I'm not very good with math, even though I got one of these pens. But so that's what we're going to be looking at this year on the floor, that bill coming out of Ed Committee. One other thing that I've done for property, how many of you think it's right when you wreck your car, you take the money from that insurance, go down to the dealership, buy a car, then you come back, do you have to pay tax on the whole thing, even the insurance money you got from the car you just wrecked? Right now, yes, you do. And so I had a constituent that happened to him last year. He came to me and I said, okay, I'll see what we can do. So I am going to be running a bill this year that will make it insurance money you get back from a vehicle will be refunded. Just like when you trade your car, if you trade a car in, you don't have to pay tax on the money, the value of that car, because there was money you've already paid tax on for that vehicle. And so we're going to try to do the same thing with a vehicle that's wrecked, even though the money's going to the insurance company and then coming back out. Because that's where our revenue department says, oh, it's two different transactions. And it's like, well, it's only one transaction for me. I've lost my car, and now I'm having to buy a new one. And so that's going to be a bill that hopefully we can get out of the drawer. And I think another bill that I'm hoping to run this year is a tax bill. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, I'm actually running a tax bill that's going to increase taxes. But what it is it's a bill to repeal the tax exemption for wind farms. Right now, they come in and they don't have to pay taxes for 3 years. And what really prompted me on this is a county commissioner came to me and said, you know, let's try to do this. And then I went to Alex Epstein's talk about fossil fuels the other day and how basically our whole wind energy deal is sucking the money out of our lives because it doesn't support itself. It's all subsidies. And so what we're doing is we're giving these people a free break to come in and put up wind turbines and produce energy at our expense, and we're not taxing them, and yet we're taxing our neighbors who are producing coal and oil and gas. And so this is just a tax to make it equal playing field for everybody. And so that's kind of what we're working on. And like everybody else has said, the reason we're coming to talk to you guys is because it's really important to have you come to committee meetings, watch on Zoom, give testimony, because I don't know, 2 years ago I was up in Sheridan County for a redistricting meeting. The room was packed with probably many of you people, I don't know. At that time I didn't know many, but the Corporations Committee brought up some bills they were voting on, and there was one bill that the public was just totally against, and you could see the committee people, they were a little comfortable. We're not comfortable with what's going on. So they tabled voting on that deal until another meeting when they didn't think there be as many people that were watching what they were doing. They didn't want to be transparent about what their motives really were. And so that's why it's important to have you guys involved helping those of us legislators who actually are conservative, because even liberals care what people see them do. If they don't think you're seeing them do it, they don't mind doing stuff that's shady. But if you're there watching, they don't want to do it in front of you. But anyway, so that's kind of what I got. I mean, we just got to be diligent to keep our private property, because between taxes, use of eminent domain, we're losing it. We don't really own property. We're just paying lease on it. So anyway, that's what I had. Thank you.
You know, I think he's probably pretty good at math. He's a rancher. Maybe not earlier in life when he had all those kids. Maybe you couldn't figure out how that worked, but he's got a bunch of them. You know, folks, we've been pushing on the governor about his CO2 negative for the state of Wyoming. And I had a constituent call me up and say, you know, you need to lay off the governor. He really is trying to do what's right. And my thing is, we got to quit managing the decline, folks. We need to have a vision for this state. We need to push on the things that actually do work. You know, coal, oil, and gas, it works. just like Alan said there, this wind and solar is not working, and it's increasing our costs. We're all paying for it. It needs to be dealt with real truth and logic. And so that's what we're going to be pushing for and trying to bring real vision to the state of Wyoming for that purpose. But with that, we're going to be going into a Q&A session, and we're really, these guys must be pretty sore from the last town hall because they were pretty quick. And so we've got a little bit more time for Q&A. I'm going to ask that a former member of the Revenue Committee come on up here. That's Mark Jennings, and a current member, Tommy Strock, for this Q&A time, because I had a feeling you might want to ask us about the taxes and the things that are happening in the Revenue Committee. And then we'll just open it up, and if we could get the lights turned up just so that people feel like they can stand up. And I don't know, do we have a mic that can go around for the people asking questions?
Is that a no?
It's okay if it's a no. We'll just make sure we reiterate what the question is up here, and then I'll get somebody to answer it. So, okay.
We do not have.
No mic. Okay, not a problem. We'll deal with it. So you all have to speak very loud. All right, Q&A. Let's get going, folks. You, sir, down here.
First off, I want to thank you guys for taking up your time to come here to speak to us. I remember when I started paying attention to politics, there was a lot of speak about this budget or that budget being the reason that our national deficit was so high. And basically what was stated to me was, if you're not addressing entitlement spending, then you're talking window dressing when it comes to budget cuts on a national level. I see the same thing about these caps and cuts for property taxes, and frankly, I didn't hear one person talking up here talk about the real solution to this. If we're gonna be talking about national deficit and entitlement spending, if we're talking about property taxes in Wyoming, the real solution is we'd have to back that acquisition-based system, and I'd like to know why that wasn't spoken of.
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. So the question is, you know, why aren't we working on the real reform that would create a change in our tax system? And what this gentleman was suggesting is that real reform would be the acquisition value. So I think a great person for answering that question is Mark Jennings. He brought the bill to create the study for acquisition study. I think we need to kind of get a little bit of history about how that started, and then I think he can share what happened. If he can't, you know, several of us members on the Revenue Committee can share what happened to acquisition value. And just so you know, Mark Jennings has promised me that he is bringing that bill in this next session. Let me dispense with something. I mentioned it earlier that we're going to be bringing real bills. This is an example of bringing a real bill that does something for you, the people, okay? They don't want acquisition value, and he'll share with you all the things that happened to show how they're trying to squash it. They don't want that real change. We want them on the record voting against that real change. And so they're going to bring things that are not real change. They're going to try to, you know, show that we didn't compromise with them, and therefore we don't deserve to be in office, and then they're going to not vote for these other bills. But we're going to force at least a vote on them so that you know where these people stand. That's the important thing. And one more example that we'll get to a little bit later, and that's the school choice. We have a champion and our majority floor leader for school choice in here, and, you know, Ocean Andrew brought a bill last year that was not brought out of the speaker's drawer after it passed the Senate for education savings accounts, real school choice. Well, we've heard in the news that the speaker has done a 180. He's no longer against school choice. Funny how that happened all of a sudden. Anyway, he brought a bill. This bill is only for the poor, okay? So it's not for everybody. And not only that, but there's a poison pill. It comes with universal daycare, okay?
Oh, I agree.
Which we consider welfare. And the legislators that you've seen up here, I don't think any of them can vote for welfare expansion. So the speaker knows that. And he knows that on introduction, we finally, thanks to you all, have enough votes to stop bad bills on introduction in the House of Representatives this year. That is a huge thing. And yes, please clap and pat yourself on the back. They're giving us a large enough number to stop bad bills. But what he's going to do is he knows we're going to vote against it. We're going to kill that thing. Ocean has also promised, just like Mark Jennings has promised to bring a real acquisition value bill, Ocean has promised to bring a real education savings account bill. And we will try to push that to a vote so that you can know who votes for the real education savings account and who does not. But I guarantee you the idea is that they will put out into the news that they had a compromise bill and we killed it. It's our way or the highway. I could vote for an education savings account only for the poor if it was incrementalism. But I can't vote for one that has welfare expansion on it. So that's the truth, folks, and we're going to try to make sure you know about it. Great question, Mark Jennings.
Once they turned the lights on, I didn't realize everybody was here. I'm kind of nervous now. Andy, great question. So let me take you back in history. I don't consider myself a property tax expert, but I could see probably 3 or 4 years ago, I believe, I began running the acquisition tax bill, and they were killing that on a regular basis the first one or two times that I ran it, so I changed it to a study bill. You got to sometimes think like they do, get the nose under the edge of the tent. And so they ran the study bill, and what we really hoped out of the study bill was that we would find the hurdles and the mines that we're not California. We can't run it exactly like Prop 13. And so that was the hopes. Well, what they did was then they actually manipulated the study bill, and we had some value out of it because now we see how they're going to fight us in some areas. We were hoping that it would actually make our transition easier, because there will be problems with acquisition, just like going to any new methodology. And so they got the study bill through, and they brought it back, and it was kind of a train wreck. And so Representative Locke and myself have talked on a number of these tax things, and so he actually made the motion. The committee actually brought it forward. He brought forward the amendments that actually would have made it palatable. It would have been a very good starting place, and then they killed it. But we have them on record. And so when they killed it, I decided that I was going to go ahead and pick that up with the amendments and see if we can't do some more fine-tuning to it, and we'll probably have to pull that out. But the difference is that the cap is important, and the cap is inside the acquisition bill. We're debating whether to put it at 1 or 2%. We don't really want to go over 2. And the problem with cap bills are that 3 years from now or 5 years from now, when they think you're not paying attention, they will go back and manipulate the system, the fair market system that we currently have. And they've proven that because that's where we're at today. You can't sustain the amount of stealing that Cheyenne's doing. You never get to own your property. And so I'm running that bill. I think it's important that we do get on with that and understand that the cap alone will not bring the true reform that needs to happen. And I will touch on one other thing, Andy, since you asked that. I think you're going to see, probably at the last minute, Chuck Gray has run it a couple of times and we've talked and I've been on it. The thing that drives taxes is spending. And Cheyenne is addicted to spending. So we've actually had an economist that ran the numbers. We can actually drop back to like 3.5%. These numbers are not, don't quote me on this. Oh, wait a minute, somebody's recording it. We could actually take the excess if we had a spending policy in place of around 3.5%. We could take the other 3.5 to 4%. And actually pay against our property taxes and help that go down even quicker. But the real answer, long term, is to put in place a spending policy and then make the actual change to something like acquisition. Hope that answers.
I'm going to ask Tony to just come up and talk about what happened in the committee on that bill as he brought it and it was voted on.
So we were obviously very much in favor of the acquisition, and I didn't speak to it specifically, but it was definitely one of the bills that was coming through, and with the study, which was really key for us, was just to try to get, as he said, as Mark said, getting our nose under the tent. At the end of the day, the study was terrible. The good news was, and actually they set the study up such that their goal was to nuke the whole acquisition concept immediately. Thank heaven to a whole bunch of people in the room who did an amazing amount of work, by the way. And I know some of you are here, some of you may not be. They did some amazing work. They prepared us. And when we went in, by the time we got done, we destroyed the people who did the acquisition study and explained how they had basically not done it in the interest, not done what they were asked to do, and we were able to kind of turn this thing back around. The good news was that meant we were able to actually push a bill in. So in the last revenue meeting, they, of course, gave us a draft of a bill that wasn't very good, but we were actually able to amend it to a pretty good bill. We actually got the amendments passed, which was a shock. But at the end of the day, the bill itself got voted down. That being said, we're still very much behind it. And as you can guess, there's a whole lot of strategy to try to figure out how to take the appropriate, take it a step at a time and try to get that in place. The good news was, when we do those kinds of things, we got some amendments passed that helped it a lot, but we also get to see how they reacted to those, where they're going, and where they're going, working against us. So it's lessons learned. We will make it better. I'm sure Mark's going to do a great job. I'm actually working with him in preparation for this next session. We're definitely behind acquisition, capture a piece of that. They're all important pieces, but again, we're just looking for your support and you staying in tune with us and working with us. Try to make sure we get the right bills passed, because as you guys know, they're expert at passing bills that look really great and don't help you at all. Thank you all.
Okay, let's move on to another question. Yes, sir.
I have a question in regards. I'm one of the people, there are several here, there's another one that have walked this petition around, and I've talked to over 100 people and gotten their signature. I feel that based on my experience, and I'm sure these fellows and ladies would agree, I think this state is on the verge of a property tax revolt. I believe it. That's what I hear. I didn't prompt it, but it's over 100 people that I've talked to personally. In fact, it's so hard to get the petition out. Everybody wants to blast me with their issue on it.
Okay.
And I tell them that same. So how does the petition cutting the tax 50% affect or is it, are you how's it how does it marry up to what you guys are doing already?
Great question. Did everybody hear the question? Okay.
Yes.
And online, are we okay with? Okay. So, just for the online people, I'll repeat it. The question is, how does the People's Initiative help or hinder what we're doing? And first of all, let me address what Tony was saying and the bill that Mark Jennings is bringing. We always want to try and do a committee bill because the percentages of those passing is double what a personal bill is. And if it's a personal bill from a conservative, then probably the numbers are even worse than that. So we're really up against it when it comes to getting our personal bills passed. Now, I think you're right about the revolt. I hope you're right. Because what that will do, more than anything else, it will show those legislators, ourselves included, exactly where the people are at. And one thing they don't want to do is lose their jobs. So they're going to react to what happens with that petition. If you guys get it done, and I pray that you do, and even if you come close, I think it'll be much like what we've seen on the federal level with amendments to the Constitution. When the people drive it, you know, Congress starts to act. I'm not sure that would happen today. They really don't even care about the people that much anymore, but the people in Cheyenne, they're close enough. They got to come back to that same neighborhood. They can't stay in Virginia or someplace like that to get away from it. They've got to come back. And if they feel the heat from that petition, they will act. And so I think it's a very good thing. We even have a bill in the Revenue Committee, but it does about half of what the People's Petition does. And so the way our taxes and our spending works is this, folks. We don't know what we're going to make next year, but we're going to create a budget for next year and the year after that. Okay, we do 2 years out. We have an organization called the CREG, which is the Consensus Revenue Estimating Group. They estimate what we're going to make in the future. They're often incorrect, but they estimate what we're going to make. But the bottom line is, whatever we bring in, we spend it all. Okay? We spend it all. Now, we have put some money in savings, and you know that our leadership is bragging about how conservative they are because they put $1.5 billion into the state savings accounts while they robbed it from your savings accounts. Okay? True. True conservatism is allowing you to spend your money the way you see fit. Okay, that's really conservatism. And so that's what we're fighting for and trying to reduce that spending. We vote against it every time. That's why there's now a clear line in the House of Representatives between conservatives and non-conservatives. You can see it in the votes for more spending and less spending. It's 26 conservatives that vote against additional spending and for reduced spending, and it's 31 Republicans that vote for more spending and vote against reducing spending. And 5 Democrats, by the way, vote with that. So I'm going to do one more question, and then we're going to take a little break. Yes, ma'am. And I'll repeat her what she's saying too.
Thank you. With the carbon sequestration that we're currently looking at, during committee, one of the experts said that the carbon would be pumped into the ground and it would turn to rock, supposedly. Well, we had a geologist come speak at one of our women's gathering up in Sheridan, and she said that the carbon would be pumped into the ground, and her terminology far surpassed my knowledge, but she was saying that the carbon would actually turn acidic, and it would seep into our streams, our rivers, and our lakes, therefore killing off our livestock. And that has not been brought, of course, to the committee or to the media. And that, to me, is frightening because apparently there are five companies that are ready to go as soon as the bill passes.
Okay. So the question is, there's a debate over the science of carbon sequestration, whether it can be detrimental to our water or not. And I suppose, like anything else, science is trying to find the truth, right? And if it's not been done before, we've not observed what happens when we put CO2 in the ground for a long period of time, I think it probably needs to be studied in a way before we risk all of our lives and our livestock. So that's the question, is it going to create, we can't answer that. What we can answer is it needs to be studied and figured out. But let me just explain to you about this carbon sequestration, why it's a problem. Carbon sequestration that is used for enhanced oil production, that's a market use for carbon sequestration, okay? That is what we want. We want free markets to determine what the price of something is, and it needs to have a benefit that's worth what we pay for it. So we have the market valuing that at $60 a ton of CO2. The oil fields will buy it at $60 a ton so they can push it in and get the oil out. The Biden administration has created something they call the 45Q tax credit, which pays $85 a ton. So this is why the Petroleum Association of Wyoming and its members are moving into the business of just storing CO2 instead of using it to get more oil out of the ground, because they can make more money from the Biden administration. Let me ask you this. Who pays for that? You do. The coal industry does. The oil industry does. Okay, this is what I call managing the decline of our fossil fuels, which will lead to death, even if it's not the CO2 destroying our water aquifers. When we don't have enough energy to heat our homes in the winter, people are going to die. So that's the problem with this carbon sequestration. And now the governor said he wants to be carbon negative. Well, you have to pull more carbon out of the air than you produce to do that. And that's why he joined with Governor Polis in Colorado, extreme Democrat, extreme liberal, to remove CO2 from the air in little trailers out in the field on the border, and then pump that into the ground. Okay? And we don't know what that's going to do, but I can tell you, you're going to be paying for it while we figure it out. Okay? So there's a problem with carbon sequestration. Does anybody else want to address that? It's up here on this panel.
I think we saw that in Spaceballs.
Oh, he says we saw that in Spaceballs. Okay. All right. So we're going to take about a 15-minute break. We'll get another group back up here. But in the meantime, we've got 11 legislators here. Please grab one of them and talk. And grab them and take them over there and get your picture taken with them as well. So thank you.
And our host, Jamie, now has opened up the hot dog stand if anybody would like a hot dog. Woo!
Jennings, the guy in the red MAGA hat. Help him find his way to the stage, please. All right, folks. We're going to get this show back on the road. Try to answer as many questions as you can. And thank you for getting with legislators and getting your questions answered one-on-one. We'll have another opportunity to do that a little bit later. But the next subjects that we're going to cover, folks, are protecting our kids. So this is near and dear to all of our hearts, I hope. But, you know, it harkens back to before the last election. We were fighting hard as a group to keep boys out of girls' sports. And after the election, suddenly many of the insiders saw the light and decided that needed to be addressed. And so though they fought us before the election, they came around to voting for a bill. It was watered down, and there are members of our group that are going to try to make that a more stout act or keep the boys out of the girls' sports. We keep hearing rumors that there's a boy competing here or there, but we haven't been able to find any proof that it's actually happening. So far, it sounds like the law is doing what it's supposed to do in the state of Wyoming. But be assured that there are forces that would like to change that. So we have to be diligent. If the citizens hear of somebody breaking that law, you need to know that it's against the law right now. But unfortunately, We saw this in the special session where we were fighting against the Biden vaccine mandates and mask mandates, that what the insiders do with bills is they say, okay, here's what we're going to do to protect the citizens, but if it goes to court and fails, this is what we're going to do. So they've admitted defeat before they even get the victory, okay? And what does a judge do with that? You know, they look at that and they say, well, the legislature obviously figured this wasn't constitutional. Okay, so what is it? We're lawmakers, right? So we're supposed to deliberate and determine what is constitutional. That is why many lawyers feel like they're more obliged to be in the role of the legislator. But even though I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn last night, I still feel capable. I still feel capable of writing good law. And I feel the same about my colleagues, that this is really about writing law from a common sense perspective. It doesn't take the doublespeak of a lot of legalese to get things done. And so we're about that. We're going to continue fighting for your guys' liberty and your freedoms. And I hope you can keep supporting us, because we came very, very close to Mark Jennings being the Speaker of the House. Yes. And I do hope that in the next election for Speaker that we do win. I've had several conversations with the current Speaker about how he gave chairmanships to people. It wasn't based on the vote, I can tell you that. It was based on holding on to power. You can see the vitriol even in the media now as they attack us. They say it's about civility. I say it's about transparency. And we are going to continue to be transparent and give you guys the information to share with your fellow neighbors so that you know what's going on down in Cheyenne. We really think that's important. So now to talk about protecting your kids. We have several bills, and I just want these legislators to really speak to them. And let's see, we'll start with Chris Knapp. He comes from my community, and we've been, I don't know if you've heard in the news or not, but we've been fighting quite a battle in the library. My wife has been the chairman of the library board for about a year, and she made the cover of the paper a lot more than I do. She's absolutely infamous in Gillette.
Go Sage Bear.
Go Sage Bear.
Yes.
You heard that little mouse in the background, right? But Chris Knapp is from that community. He knows what's going on there, and he's been fighting it on the state level. I'd like him to share that with you.
Thanks for having me, and I think long overdue. In the back there, we'd like to welcome President Trump. Well, one of the beauties of being a state legislator is to be able to work with people of principle. And I think that's one of the blessings that we have, is that I always used to say, if you get us all in a room, it doesn't matter that you're a caucus or not, if you got us all in a room and put a vote in front of us, we would vote off principle. That's what we would vote off. We can't move from that core principle. And so that's the difference that you'll see, I think, in legislature. I always say, if we're so divided and we're voting off principle, what's the other side voting on? And that's a key question. So the bills that I want to talk about are two. One is the CRT bill, and that's our schools, protecting our kids in schools. And that's basically, as you all know, we don't want race, religion, any ethnicity to become a reason that you're set apart or that your past is somehow equated to your moral character. And that's what's happening in schools all across the country, and we can especially see it even with the conflict in Gaza, that across the U.S., for some reason, it's dangerous to be a certain race right now. It's dangerous to be Christian, or dangerous to have a different faith, that somehow you're set apart as a oppressor versus a victim. And I think that's very dangerous to have, and it's very dangerous to teach in our schools, so that's one. Number two, as John mentioned, is pornography in our schools, obscenity in our libraries. And I think most communities will deal with this at some time or another across the U.S. So the bill that I came up with last time, because if you ask any legislator, I'm a very sensible person. So I took things, I don't like bringing emotion out onto the floor of the House, because when you match emotion with emotion, it escalates. People divide, they stop listening to each other, they roll their eyes at you when you speak. So I try to keep things as trying to capture the middle, trying to capture those people that maybe sit on the fence and are waiting for a logical, factual discussion that they can make a decision on, and they may slide to a conservative side when normally they wouldn't. So that's one of our jobs, that's one of our roles. So the bill that I came up with dealt with pornography in schools. And I tried to take it from the aspect of a decision that's already been decided. Because in the newspaper in Gillette, you never heard them say, this has already been decided. The Supreme Court has already decided this in the Miller test. So it's a Miller case. And basically what it was is this guy had a shop, a pornographic shop, and he began mailing out flyers to people to advertise his shop. Well, on the flyer, it was a pornographic picture. So they took him to court, and it ended up at the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, Mr. Miller, your speech is not protected by the First Amendment. Anything that is pornographic or offensive to a community, as far as obscene goes, is not a protected right, they determined. The other important piece they determined was that the community itself, it would be remanded back to the communities to decide for themselves what that definition of obscenity was. And so logically, we are a republic, right? We're a republic. So those local people that we elect would be the county commissioners, city council. The county commissioners are typically the ones involved with your local library board. And so if the county commissioners, who are elected by the county, the entire county, the majority of the people, they can decide what is obscene or not obscene. That's what the Supreme Court said they could do. And so to me, if the library board falls fiduciarily under the county commissioners, that board is appointed by the county commissioners, then it would seem logical that the county commissioners can decide what is obscene for that community or not, put that in rules and regulations for all the departments to follow. If the library board is following that, wonderful. If the director's following that, wonderful. That's the way it's supposed to be. If the community disagrees with that, the next election is the answer. So if they would like a different definition of obscenity, if the majority of the people want to vote new commissioners in, to me that was the logical step. So that's the approach that I took was, look, we can argue back and forth about what I believe is obscene, what you believe is obscene, but the Supreme Court has already decided this. They gave a solution to it, although it was a solution for other people to make the decision. But that's what they decided, and that's probably what the rule we should follow to solve it. So that's the bill I came up with. Which got voted down?
Yeah, his bill got voted down. Must have been said hi for him. He's a tall fellow. I'd like to have Mark Jennings come up and tell you a little bit about the history of something he did. We have on the books right now a Parental Rights Act, and unfortunately it's not being enforced right now. And so I'd just like him to share with you what he did in that regard and where we're at.
Seems like, are you all, is this a new crowd? Or is it a whole new crowd? Okay. So I have to go back in time, and John's taxing my memory here. Probably my first or second year in, third year, because we had a president on the Senate side that did not want, he didn't mind parental rights as long as the parents proved that they
were fit parents. And I refused to run the bill that way. And so I authored the parental rights. It is not in our U.S. Constitution, it's not in our Wyoming Constitution, that you have the fundamental right to raise your children. Now, most people don't understand that because it's in law, it's always been practiced that you have that fundamental right, but it's actually not in the Constitution. And it's not in the Wyoming Constitution either, still is not. It is in Wyoming statute now. My third year in, I ran it again. The first year I ran it, and the Senate, the President of the Senate, said you either put it in that parents have to be tested if they're fit parents. And I said, no, just kill the bill. I won't allow that to be part of it. So when he got out of the legislature, then I ran the bill again, and it actually passed. And it states that you in Wyoming have the fundamental right to raise your children. And it covers all the gamuts. In school, you are the parent. It covers the entire thing. Now, there's currently a battle about that, which I have mixed emotions about us putting more into that, because sometimes when you put more things in, what they want to say is, well, schools have particular rights towards your child. No, I'm sorry, they don't. You're the parent. God saw fit to give you the child. You're the parent. You have the fundamental right to raise that child. And it's an awesome responsibility. But there's some legislation that's coming forward because the schools are taking exception to that and saying, well, at the threshold of the school door, the child then becomes our ward. And I believe that I probably made a mistake. I hate to tell you that. I probably did.
No.
That's right. I think I should have put some penalties, some harsh penalties for people that violate that. Something like $750 a day if you're a school and you violate a parent's rights. And so probably long term, that probably is one of the major things that we need to do is put some real teeth into it. The problem that we're finding is that very few law enforcement are willing to actually go after that. And so that's the history to it. The law is already on the books. It's already there. You as the parent are the ones that should have the fundamental rights. And statutorily in Wyoming, that's true. I think long term, it would behoove us to have a constitutional amendment and actually put it in our Constitution. So,
here. Thank you, Mark. And now we're going to wrap that up and go on to another subject, which is restoring our freedom. But somebody who kind of covers both of those subjects is Jeanette Ward. She's a real fireball. She is the Marjorie Taylor Greene of the Wyoming House of Representatives. If you ever know what it's like to be the chairman of the Freedom Caucus and trying to keep people, you know, so they're on the same page and just not quite getting out there, you can imagine it's not easy, but we enjoy working with Jeanette, and so I'd like her to share quite a bit about what she's doing in this next session, which has to do with parental rights, and what she's been doing in the past session, and what she'll be doing again as far as restoring our freedom.
There. I'm Jeanette Ward, District 57, the southeast-ish corner of Casper, approximately. And my good friend there, Chris Knapp, says he likes to take the sensible approach. And like John Bear alluded to, I tend to take the direct frontal assault. So I just want to mention quickly, I did try to protect parental rights with House Bill 87, which took the exemption away from museums, educators, and librarians for showing obscenity to school children. And the objection to that was, well, Ms. Ward, you're taking away local control. Well, I think parents are the most local control of all. Wouldn't you agree? But that bill died in the Revenue Committee. Now, why would that get assigned to the Revenue Committee? Go figure. I also tried to pull SF-117, which is parental rights in education, would have prevented the teaching of radical gender ideology to children from the speaker's desk, but I was unsuccessful in my attempt. And I will keep trying, you bet. I also ran HB-66, which would have prevented discrimination for not wearing a mask, not getting tested, and not getting vaccinated. Because never again are we going to let the government shut down our businesses. Make us cover our faces and inject ourselves with a bioweapon. Never again. And I will run that bill again. And by the way, since we're here in Johnson County, you should know that a legislator whose initials are BC killed that bill with an $847 million appropriation just in case the federal government didn't pay for Medicaid in Wyoming.
Poison baby.
Yes. Poison BC. I would argue our freedoms are priceless, and we are not beholden to the federal government for our freedoms. Reading on a vote of 29 to 32. So I thought, well, what else can I do? And I tried HB 143, which declared that the CDC and WHO had no jurisdiction in Wyoming. You would think in Wyoming that would be a no-brainer. But it failed on third reading, 29 to 32 on the House floor. So I will try again. I will try again to protect your medical freedom and your right to not be told what to do by the federal government. I'm going to allude to something quickly with respect to the pro-life. You've heard that judge who ruled put a stay on our pro-life bill. She couldn't bring herself to refer to pregnant women. She referred to pregnant people instead. So I've been talking with some folks, and some legal folks think that might be impeachable.
Yeah, it
is. So stay tuned, and you can count on me. I'm going to continue to be the direct frontal assault.
There's another bill that she's going to try to run this session that she didn't mention. What is a woman, correct?
Yes.
The definition of a woman. Don't you think we should have that in statute in the state of Wyoming? I think so too. Yeah, no. I got your back. Okay, so again, on that idea of protecting your freedoms and liberties, I'd like to bring up Ken Pendergraf and just have him share what he's been working on and, you know, really. Well, I'll just let him speak to her.
Just take a second and thank Jamie Clare for this beautiful place and everything that he does. When David and Joey and I kicked off the Independence Network, it wouldn't happen without him at that particular kickoff party. And thanks for doing this as well. We look forward to many more. How many of you can remember all the way back to when you were 16? Greg, you can remember that?
I remember.
Yeah. I remember. I knew you did. So, 16, I got my driver's license. And I wanted to be free. I wasn't particularly enamored with the way things were at my house. It was made very clear to me, this is not your house. And what's the difference? At 16, I'm working at McDonald's for $2.35 an hour. And I had a car payment, insurance payment was about three times what the car payment was because it was a GTO. But the reason that I could not be free was because I wasn't responsible. Freedom is contingent upon responsibility. If you're not responsible for yourself, you're not free. And we keep selling ourselves out to the federal government. We are addicted to federal money. And so anybody who wants to tell you that Wyoming is free is lying. But we can be free. Last session, I ran what Wildfile said was the stupidest bill run in the entire session. If Wildfile says it's stupid, I'm probably on the right track. What this bill would have done was set up a committee to monitor federal regulations and nullify it, to reinforce the 10th Amendment. Now, I made it as a pretty broad sweeping bill, and probably rightfully so. It was frankly laughed off the floor and went down in flames. I'm bringing it back. We're looking at several other ways to run that bill, maybe kind of narrow the focus a little bit, focus on just two or three things, try to get a foot in the door. But I want you to watch for that. But you've heard about a couple of bills that sound like they're conservative. There's an ESA bill from Speaker Summers. Absolute poison. Okay, now I'm going to say this real quick. If one of the 26 conservatives votes, or if a lot of us, vote against a bill that sounds good and you're upset because you read in the newspaper, which obviously tell you everything that's true, if you've read that and you haven't been listening to my pal David Iverson, you might not understand where the poison pills are. Before you go ballistic and write nasty things to us or put something in the paper, give us a call. Say, hey, why didn't you support this? This sounds like the right thing. ESA is one of those. There's a couple more. But one of them is 24 LSO 296, which is put out by a subcommittee, and Scott Heiner, a friend of ours, is chairman of that, and he did not vote for this. But what this would do was to appoint one person to monitor federal regulation. He would work in the governor's office and report to the governor and report to the legislature and try to give us a... They're copying our idea. But the flaw is they put him basically under the thumb of the governor, who has already proven he didn't give a rip about our rights. He will sell us out in a heartbeat. You've seen him do it. And I'm with you, girl. Never again. When that first one came out, there were several of us downtown Sheridan standing on the street protesting that, and I never put on a mask. You know. People call me all the time, and they say, how do we get this done? Seems like a no-brainer. Wyoming's a conservative state, right? How do we get this done? Most of the time I say, you know, we ran bills. We ran, what, 21, 23 bills or something on property taxes, all of which got flushed, essentially, including acquisition, which I'm proud to have co-sponsored. Thanks for bringing that. But it ultimately got flushed. They just made it take longer. So how do we get these things work? Because if you guys have a lot of great ideas, you call us and say, hey, what do we have to do? Folks, you got to change the butts in the seats. You see the little buttons out there, say 31 is greater than 26. Okay? What that alludes to is anytime anything goes wrong, they kick the 26 or the Freedom Caucus or whatever label they want to put on us, and they want to tell us we're the problem. There's a little thing that says six more in 24. Let me turn it around. Woo! Right here in Sheridan County, we can do a third of that if we clean up Sheridan County.
Johnson County, too.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do. We're up there working our tails off. Somebody asked me the other day, said, how much time does it take to be a legislator? I said, all of it. Every night when I go to bed, I realize I didn't do enough. It takes everything you got. 26 of us are working our tails off, trying to get the right things done. Don't be inclined to want to say when the election comes up, throw all the bums out. Know how your representative votes and understand that, and then send us a little bit more help. Actually, instead of 6 more and 24, I'd say 12 more. And we'll start turning the state around. I thank you for your attention. I thank you for being here. It really means a lot to me. It means a great deal to me to be surrounded by so many friends that work down in Cheyenne. And I would encourage you, I'm preaching to the choir here, I know that. Get off your butts. Change some butts in the seats. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ken. The next gentleman, we call him Wild Bill. You know, the Ag Committee was meeting this summer, and the Federal Bureau of Land Management came in and said, hey, we're going to change things up. And we're going to take the land and just lock it up and not let people use it down there in Rock Springs. And guys like Bill and Chip Nyman came back and said, hey, we got to do something about this. We can't just let this go unspoken. So we had a town hall, and Bill just really said it like it was. He said, this is bad. And then the media said, well, you know, they're just extremists, you know, there's just no way that's all hyperbole. And then, you know, a few weeks later, the same media was saying the same things that Bill was saying and Chip was saying. And so, you know, eventually they're going to join us because they realize it's going to affect them too. It should be all of Wyoming against the federal government and the Biden administration. I'm going to ask Bill to come up here and just share with you what he was trying to do on your behalf in the last session to protect your freedoms and liberties.
Hi, Bill.
Thank you, John, and welcome to all you folks for showing up tonight. I'm Bill Allman, House District 58, which is northern Natrona County. Don't hold that against me. I want to kind of go off target for just a second. I've been told by people, and I've read it in the newspapers, that every morning, John Bear and the Freedom Caucus gave me my walking orders and told me how to vote. Folks, that did not happen one time. And if it did, I would no longer be in the Freedom Caucus, which today I'm very proud to be in. One other thing that's just... it shows our freedom, but it's a little bit off topic. It was probably about a year ago in the Ramble Room by our host, Mr. Pendergraph. He made a statement that I've thought a lot about ever since. He said, at our last election, God reached out and plucked a representative from here and brought him into the House. Then he reached out, I need someone else to do this for me. He reached out and plucked another one. I thought a lot about that, and that is 100% the truth. Now back to topic. I ran House Bill 116, and what this bill would have done was stopped China, Russia, and all sponsors of state terror from buying Wyoming land, minerals, and industries. That bill brought in more favorable comments on our website, or our websites and our emails, than any other bill that I know of. Maybe Conventions of States was close. I did not receive one negative writing on that bill.
The bill went to the House committee, which I'm a member of. And in the House committee, a lawyer who's a legislator from Johnson County put a $5 million appropriation on it so that the Secretary of State would have money to administer the bill. Secretary of State testified that he did not need the money. But we got the amendment. So when the amendment was put on, it had to go to appropriations. Appropriations did a pretty good job itself. It put $100 million in case we ever got sued. When it went out of the Agriculture Committee, the vote was 8-1. A representative from Johnson County was the only person who voted against it. And, of course, with $105 million appropriations on it, the bill failed. Of course it did. But the good news is, we're going back.
Yes.
The bill has been, it is complete. LSO has not seen it yet. They might be a little surprised when they do. But it's coming back better. And this time, I think it's going to pass.
Woo-hoo!
And we will protect our lands from bad acts. Just on a personal note, every night when I go home or every morning when I leave, I go through the Teapot Dome oil field, which many of you know about that from your history books. Today, it's owned by the Chinese. Fortunately, there's not a flag up, but in the future there may. Another bill I ran last year, and I'm going to run again this year, is to stop all firearm tracking with your credit cards. If we can get this passed, you can now buy a firearm or ammunition with your credit card, and state law says it will not be tracked. And that's pretty much what I have to say. And once again, I thank you all for coming. And have a great day and a safe trip home. Thank you.
All right, we got a choice here. We can move on to our keynote speakers, or we can do a little Q&A before we start with them. I'll leave it up to you, Gal. Would you like to have a little Q&A right now?
Sure.
It'll be very brief, okay. All right, so if you'll turn the lights on, and raise your hand if you got a question for this panel right here. I see one back here. Yes, you ma'am. Go ahead.
Question. In real estate, if there's a foreign entity that's buying American property, there has to be notification. How did China get their hands on that oil?
That's a great question. How did China get that Teapot Dome oil field without notifying? Well, in Wyoming statute, we don't require that notification. That's exactly what his bill would have done. And I assume that Arkansas already had that on the books, because we know that the governor of Arkansas, a great patriot, kicked China out of their state on a piece of property and business. I think it was Reagan that said that we need to paint in bold strokes and bold colors and no more pastels. Well, that's what needs to happen in the state of Wyoming. We need to stop trying to appease all of these people for legal reasons, and we need to say this is America, and Americans will own our ag land and our oil and our coal, and we'll fight for it. So I think that answers your question.
I just wondered, could you just go through exactly what this session is? I know it's a budget session, so it's slightly different. So when I hear things in the media, I'll know why things fail.
Yeah, great question. The question was, explain to us this next session that's coming up. It is a 20 business day session. The previous session, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a 40-day session. So we get 60 days to do our work every 2 years. And the 40-day session that we just had was a general session where we're supposed to be passing these laws that we've been discussing. The one that we haven't discussed a great deal is the one that you know, I'm really invested in, but would put you all to sleep, is the budget. And that's what this upcoming session is really supposed to be all about. It's supposed to be 20 days focused on the budget. And because it's supposed to be focused on the budget, any of these other bills that we're talking about, they require a two-thirds vote to be introduced. And that is where you guys came in. You've given the House of Representatives enough conservatives that we have more than one-third. So that means that any bill that's going to be introduced in the House has to be passed by at least some of these conservative members. And so we don't have two-thirds, though, which means that our bills will stand a real test to get past that gauntlet. But that's what this session is about, and that's what makes the previous session a real question mark. Why did we have a supplemental budget? Because in the session prior to that, we had a two-year budget, which I think Mark Jennings would tell you he's only voted for one budget in his time in there. I got to vote for that budget, by the way. I voted for one budget, and that was during COVID because we had a $450 million reduction in state spending, and that's why we were able to get on board and vote for that. But last session, just this year, we had a $2 billion surplus. And folks, we got to figure out how to spend all that money. You know, we couldn't just write a check back to you all. So, now, like I mentioned earlier, because of the number of people who's in the legislature, as I said earlier, got to change butts and seats if you want to get that check back. But it's been bragged by the leadership that they're conservative, and it was conservative for them to put 3/4 of that into the state savings account. Their argument is that it'll generate revenue, it'll avoid you having to pay more taxes later. You all understand what I'm saying. I can tell by the murmur. The bottom line, though, is that they spent $540 million. During that spending spree, I got up and said, hey, you just spent $35 million in 2 hours at this rate. You know, here's where we're going to be. And there was actually laughter and clapping from the other side of the room. Okay? And that laughter and that clapping isn't just at us. That's at you all. They're laughing and clapping as they take your money and spend it the way they see fit. Okay? That's really what we're up against. And that's what this next session is going to be about. We've already been told that we again have a $700 or $800 million surplus. Okay? So if you think that we're going to cut spending back, think again. Prior to me, Chuck Gray would run this rule every session. Since he's gone, I'm running it now. And what it is that if you're going, the governor submits a budget to the Joint Appropriations Committee. They hear from all the governor's departments and the executive and determine what that budget really should be, just in case there needs to be a check on the governor and his spending. And then that budget is presented to us, and we as a body vote on it. We get to add or subtract from that if we choose. So we've been running a rule that says that if you're going to bring an add to the budget that the governor, the JAC, came up with, you have to come with an offset. You've got to go find somewhere else that we're going to reduce spending. And you have never seen any rule receive as much flack as that one has. But it's just a little bit of common sense. And we're not even saying we're going to spend less than what the governor said. We're going to just stop it right where the governor is at. We're going to draw a line, and we're not going to do more. But we can't do that. And we're going to laugh at you all while we spend more. Yes, sir. This will be the last one, folks. No more.
Oh, good. This is a major gripe that I have. If you folks don't think that the underground of the nonprofits aren't monitoring these overages, you're wrong. You remember this. The city, the county, you all know this, I know this, but I'm just infuriated. I've lived in a number of states in this country and also in Canada for a while. But I'll tell you this, I have never seen a state that picks winners and losers with nonprofits. People are coming from out of state here to get into the nonprofit business. Yes. It's a whole government underneath your level.
Yes.
And we need to stop it. I know that Sheridan County alone has over 600 nonprofits. That's just unbelievable. They're not getting money, but a lot of them die, you know. They come in, they die. They'll create slums in your neighborhoods. You have to live outside this state for a good while to understand how deleterious this is to our society. Stop picking winners and losers. Let them prove to the people that will donate to them that their objective is a good one.
I didn't hear a question in there, so I'm just going to say amen. All right. Mark, are you ready?